Comic Conversations.
It's awesome.
With your host,
the wickedly talented
Batman.
The Yappapai of the Strap Match Jack.
Luro.
Hey, what do you think of your opponent, Michael Johnson? I don't give a fuck how many gold medals he won. That's the sprinter, Michael Johnson. Well, I don't give a fuck if he's in the NFL or not. That's the offensive lineman from the Falcons, Michael Johnson. I don't give a fuck how good he is at yodeling. That's Michael Johnson, the country music yodeler.
And Marvel 2K.
Ken Stahl's a space alien. He ain't even a real man. He's from Mars, that's right. A madman from Mars, and they're invading the planet. He flies around in a spaceship handing out cigarettes made by little green men to kill your babies and destroy our
press. We've been talking about that little clip all week.
We all happen to have listened to, what was it, Rush Limbaugh?
Yes. Paul Shanklin, I believe, is the man.
He played an incredibly old clip of James Carville talking about Ken Starr. We laughed uproariously at that.
It is, in fact, very funny. All right, let's go into the show proper. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Fat Man. You're listening to episode 109 of Comic Conversation. As always, I am joined by my co-hosts, Marvel 2K and Lura. Lura, how you doing tonight?
I had Thai food twice today.
Ooh. Yeah, let's make this show quick because you're probably going to have to poo later.
Whoa.
Isn't that what Thai food makes you do?
In it.
Ooh. How was that?
Yeah, it was good. Lauren had pumpkin curry, and I had something hot, which had the word Kang in the name.
Ooh.
Yeah, so it's comic related.
Yeah, there you go. All right. And Marvel 2K.
Oh, I had Thai food yesterday.
Ah, nice. So, small world.
Comic Conversations, we're coming to Thailand.
All right, let's skip news because we felt like there was nothing really that we felt like talking this week. So we're going to go straight into lightning round. Okay, I know I said I was going to do my lightning round review of Dying of the Dead. I did read it, and I loved it so much. I kept telling these guys to read it, and Laurel got to reading it. So with two of the three of us reading it, we're going to bump that down into our regular reviews. And what got bumped up into lightning round this week was Age of Ultron versus Marvel Zombies, Star-Lord and Kitty Pryde. And I'm just going to mention it right here, even though it's technically not a lightning round review. We said we were going to review Deadpool versus Thanos, but Lural read a couple pages and tapped out, and I made it like halfway through the book, and I tapped out, so. We were coming off the heels of that great Deadpool Secret War, and we decided, let's read another Deadpool book and see if it's good, and, we were, mistaken.
Well, I don't know if it was good or not, cause I didn't read much of it.
I tried so hard, and I just couldn't do it. When I saw a guy in a chicken suit, and Deadpool doing bad comedy, I was like, nope.
Reviews are all right if it makes any difference to people.
Yes. All right. Age of Ultron versus Marvel Zombies. You and I both read it, but we don't have much to talk about because I didn't think it was much of an ending issue. And so far, up until now, it was actually pretty good.
Well, it ended.
Yeah.
And it wrapped up pretty... Sorry, my wife is watching that Pretty Little Liars and a girl with huge boobs just walked on the screen.
Ooh, nice. Let me investigate this now while you're talking.
It distracted me. Oh, and they're at a beach. Oh, but the one I want to see in a bikini. Okay, Age of Ultron versus Marvel Zombies. So, in the last issue, we found out they were going to stop the zombies and the robots, the combined zombie robots. But Jim Hammond, Vision, and Wonder Man would have to sacrifice themselves. So, in this issue, he told them, you have to sacrifice yourselves. They all flew up into a big ionic energy blast he shot off, but before that we got memories of them meeting with their loved ones at the last minute before flying into it. Wonder Man's girlfriend, who is a robot who was built out of Vision parts or
yes.
something
so, to that equivalent.
Yeah, they basically just needed three of them, but since her boyfriend or her husband was gonna die, she wanted to die too, so she took Hammond's place. So Hammond got to stay behind. The little blast goes out, and it basically disabled all the robot parts. Since the zombies were all attached to robot parts, they were also disabled, and it put a new dome around their little sanctuary.
Yeah, the dome was made up of the zombie Ultron hybrids.
Yeah, so the end of... Yeah. So they were all basically stuck outside it, and that is their news. So they will presumably be safe because they will not be able to break it again. They were pretty clear to say this had no real effect at all because there are many more zombies. There are, Ultron himself was turned off, but they said it was temporarily. He's going to be fine. So
they didn't want to clash whatever Hickman's doing in Secret Wars, so they had to leave that out for them.
Or what whoever's doing in Siege.
Mm. That's so, who. But I think that has a stronger connection to what they're going to do later.
Yeah. And Wasp showed back up to be with the Wasp from Timely showed back up to be with the Hank Pym from Timely.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah, it was a cute story.
Hey, just so how much I thought of Age of Ultron versus Marvel Zombies on that series, Pretty Little Liars. Which blonde is it? Because I'm looking at a character wiki. Is it Allison or Hannah?
It's the main blonde.
Oh, okay, I presume it'd be Hannah then.
Yeah, look her up on Google Images.
Okay, let's move on to our second and final lightning round review. While I look that up, Star-Lord and Kitty Pryde.
Yeah, this was the last issue of this little series. Basically, they were kidnapped in the last issue by Gambit, because remember, he was after he had an anomaly he was trying to sell off to Kitty or something.
Oh god, what an anomaly.
Yeah. So, they were able to escape, and they were helped and rescued by Drax, the club version from that. And, at the end of the issue, we find out what's in the box. And the anomaly is actually Rocket Raccoon's tail, which
oh, that's cute.
Which Star-Lord had mentioned that it's always been rumored that it's detachable from him.
Mm-hmm.
So he was so upset that was the last thing of his, you know, his past,
aww, the past world,
that Kitty decided to give it to him as a way to remember Rocket, and she's like, "Don't worry about it. I'll make up an excuse why I don't have it." And so they leave Gambit with anti-Doom propaganda, with the doors waiting for him. So, you know. Yeah, but yeah, that was pretty much it. It was
a thrilling conclusion to a subpar miniseries.
Yeah, it wasn't bad, wasn't great. It was just whatever. It probably didn't even need to be done, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I read this and I kept thinking, okay, why did I need to read this?
There was no, well, it was three issues, I guess. That's why.
Wow, and most of these books are going at least four. And we got a conclusion. A lot of these were at five, so I don't know.
Maybe some know are why concluding at four, some are concluding at five, apparently. But this one concluded at three.
Lauren's reading a pamphlet on Kegels. You know what that is?
Isn't that Kegel? Isn't it pronounced Kegels?
I don't know. Isn't the vagina exercise?
Yeah, that's on. Yeah, that's what it is.
That tighten it up. I'm pretty excited about this.
There's no guy version of Kegels.
Well, she grabbed the. The pamphlet when she was getting her birth control.
That's on.
So, well, they had pamphlets.
Yeah, but what, of Kegels?
Well, yeah, because a lot of the women who go there, maybe they're very loose because they've had a lot of kids.
TMI.
Well, I don't know. Lauren's not. Just, you know, maybe some of them are.
All right, let's go in this week's books.
Lauren's usually not awake.
Shut up!
En mi casa y con mi gente se respeta.
Yeah.
That's all of my Spanish.
Oh.
That is the extent of my Spanish.
Donde el baño. Por favor.
Donde está biblioteca?
Where is the library?
Yes.
Oh, you took some Spanish.
Also baño.
Ustedes also uno come mierda.
Something about my mother, I presume.
No.
He actually speaks Spanish.
Yeah, he's fluent.
Yeah, so.
Okay, enough of the Spanish lesson. Let's go over this week's books, which are as follows. Providence number 4, War Stories 12, John Flood 2, Broken World 4, The Empty 6, Jupiter Circle 6, Dying in the Dead 3, Lazarus 19, We Stand on Guard 3, Imperium 8, Daredevil 18, Future Imperfect 5, Groot 4, Miracle Man by Neil Gaiman 1, House of M 2, Silk 7, Silver Surfer 14, Spider Island 3, Squadron Sinister 3, and Thor's... I wrote 2, three. But I'm pretty sure it's 3, right?
It's 3.
Okay.
It's 3. When you started talking about the comics, you then, when you listed them off, you then went on for 12 minutes, it seemed like. We read a lot of books.
Yeah, well, yeah, more than... Well, actually, you know what? It wasn't more than usual.
It wasn't more than...
I think, what was it, 2 weeks ago, we had like 26, and I read like 22 this week, so...
Well,
I also read them slower too, because I've gone back and listened to myself, and often I'll just fly by the titles to which I can't even understand what I'm saying.
Okay. Well, let's get started then. Okay. We got a lot to get there.
You guys have any preference on where we start?
No. Wait, no. Let's start with that book you just had me read.
Oh, Dying the Dead by Jonathan Hickman.
I just read it.
Yeah, well, you do your review. I'll pull it up on Comic List so I can get the proper artist.
Okay, this was issue 3 of this book. I don't know what happened in the first two issues.
I told you it was issue 3, but it's what they do with a lot of these. I guess it's sort of my commentary on comic books nowadays. This read like an issue 1. Like, you didn't need to read issue 1 or 2. You came into this, now you know the premise of the book, where it's going, what it's about, so.
So, the book opens up, Hitler, Mussolini, and Hirohito are sitting in a bunker somewhere, and they're meeting, and they discuss the secret history of the world, wherein there are a group of immortals who have used humans as slaves since prehistory. But humans eventually evolve and rebel, and then they kill all the rebellious ones, and then they start the process over. But something happened where the immortals had a civil war, and they built a weapon, like a axe sword thing that could kill other immortals, which allowed humans to
evolve. I thought the axe hammer thing just killed the... It killed several humans very quickly, and that they divided another weapon to kill the immortals.
No, they took that weapon that a guy named the Judge used, and they changed it in such a way that it could kill immortals.
Okay.
So what the immortals did then, and I believe they're called the Baduri, they, like, shadow controlled the world. However, Hitler, Mussolini, and Hirohito knew about this. So they assembled the pieces of this weapon and were going to use it to, because they said, the only countries that weren't controlled by these immortals were the Axis powers.
Correct.
And they were going to use it to kill them, which would then weaken, you know, America was the only one they mentioned, but they would weaken America and allow them to take over the world. However, Hirohito, who is a god, not really, but
he
historically,
in the eyes of
the
Japanese people, he's a god.
Yes, he was the god emperor, decided, well, he has to be immortal if he's going to be a god. So he took out a samurai sword and he killed Hitler and Mussolini. And then he apparently gave the weapon to the Baduri. And then the issue ended.
I thought that was great.
A lot more enthralled with this than me.
Really? You didn't like it?
I thought it was fine. I thought it had good art, and it's a somewhat interesting premise, but it did not excite me in any way. I will read the second issue.
Oh.
Or the fourth
and
issue.
And you missed out a crucial part of the thing is, during the Civil War, they stopped the humans from uprising to the degree that they... Normally, they would have the strong humans or the smart humans, and they would kill them off so they wouldn't lead a rebellion against humanity.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, you're right.
But because they were at Civil War, they decided to cultivate the humans by having the strong breed with the strong, the smart with the smart. And then eventually that's how the humans took over the Earth. So eventually the immortals just slinked in the background and controlled things through secret.
They weren't, there's not that many of them. He actually never got into that. He never said how many there were, but we get the impression there's not that many of them. So they used humans to fight proxy wars, which is why they sort of lean them towards selective breeding, which made the humans better. Yeah, it was fine. There was nothing wrong with it. I just didn't find it special in any way.
Okay, maybe that's just me being a fanboy. And the art from that is Ryan Bodam.
Yeah, the art was good.
Yes, okay. Let's move on to our next book, Providence number 4, writer Alan Moore, art by, let's see if I can pronounce this, J. Ren Burroughs.
I found this kind of tedious to read.
Whereas I found it very interesting. We already talked about
Marvel's slowly joining my camp of finding this book tedious.
No,
no, I like the first three issues. It's just this one. I understand there was that whole thing with the hillbillies and whatever, but I don't know. It seems like it's moving at a
snail's pace.
Slow.
Yeah.
Well, it is. It's a 12 issue series though. And I mean, he has an endpoint in mind. This is, in the last issue, he'd been sent to meet a guy in another town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now he's going to another town.
Yeah. So he goes to the other town. And he's talking to the barber there. None of the people would tell him where this guy was. And the barber explained to him, basically, this guy's a inbreeding hillbilly. And that is why the people, they either don't know about him or they don't want to admit they know about him. But this guy tells him where to find him. So he goes off to find the hillbilly. And this hillbilly actually not quite as creepy. Well, he is, but on the surface, not about? As creepy as you would imagine. Oh, okay. He lives there with his idiot daughter,
who's also his somewhat wife.
Ugh, yeah. That's so gross.
He apparently that was him who impregnated his daughter, right?
Yes. They even show the flashback later.
So apparently. He impregnated his idiot daughter during some sort of ceremony because she gave birth to a monster baby who not only looked monstrous, but he was 6.5 years old. And despite talking like a complete redneck idiot, he was a genius.
Yes, he was a prodigy.
Yeah, and they showed some sort of magical things going on during his conception, so that explains this. Our main character was incredibly creeped out by all this, and when the guy told him, like, oh, well, you should go in and talk to my daughter, he's like, I should be getting back to town. He's like, no, it's fine, you write a book, you gotta say good things about us. So, like, he's got at one point, the dad leaves him with the daughter, and he's like, she's in there doing her problems, and she's fucking coloring. She's coloring, she's doing drawings on paper.
Awesome.
And then he goes, well, you could go talk to the boy now. And they were apparently renovating the upstairs for the baby and this guy who lived in a shed. Yeah. So he goes out to talk to him, and the boy gets incredibly agitated because he knows he's from a newspaper. And he said that he basically acknowledged the secret world that he's actually writing this book about. And he said, but you know, you're not part of the natural order here, and therefore I don't want you here. And he goes off to do something.
Yes, in the shed, apparently.
Yeah. But so this shed, I actually typed on Facebook, what the fuck was in the shed? Apparently the baby of the dad and the daughter was kept in a shed which had blood around it, and she arrives to find out that he's done something in there, but the baby is apparently still there. We never see the baby, but we are led to believe that this baby is some sort of horrific monster.
In the first the first page, you know, that scene where she went to the shed and there was dialogue and she's like, oh, what did you do in there? The first page is that, but it's from the point of view of whatever that baby was. With the remember the bubbles, you couldn't make out what it was?
Oh, was that? Is that what that was? Okay, that's clever. I didn't even catch that. So the baby's some kind of horrific monster. There was another thing about this. That guy had belonged to the secret society who had the book, but he got kicked out because he said, the writer, he had mentioned to him, cause he was very nice to this redneck. Well, he's not a redneck, he's a hillbilly. It's a different thing, because they're not in the South.
I like that all people, you know, nice different between the two.
And the guy, while he's into all this fucked up inbreeding and shit, he wasn't a complete idiot to what's going on. He was a part of the secret society, but him and the guy we had met in the last issue, they were all forced out, because even though they knew all this shit, they were low-class people.
Yeah.
Because they were hillbillies and stuff. And he just remarked out, well, it's kind of terrible. You're all in this club together, but just because you're different, they kicked you out. And he's like, yeah, it is terrible. He's like, so I'm going to take care of it myself. And You know, he was trying to give birth to this, they called it the Redeemer.
Huh.
Which is apparently what the creepy 6.5-year-old is. But as he's leaving, when he leaves at night, the guy's basically like warning him, like, stay on the road.
Yeah.
Because the things you gotta be scared of aren't just the things you can see. It's things you can't see. But he's also worried that his idiot demon son is apparently going to murder him. And then he walked off and the issue ended. I found it interesting. I really like this idea that there is this creepy occult world, but it's full of just fucking redneck, horrible, backwaters, inbred weirdos.
Yeah, even when he's doing research and he's talking to the people that own the home, he's like, oh, I'm doing a book on about America, but like the hidden part of America that most people don't know about. And he was so like just, you know, nonchalant about it. I'm like,
yeah, and if this was real, this would be the most fascinating book ever written.
Or it
which
might,
is why I liked this. And it's I like the dichotomy between this idiot, this hillbilly, but him having all this knowledge that most people just do not have because they were never exposed to that world. I think it's a really cute writing trick in what he's been doing. And he's slowly introducing more of the more fantastical stuff into the regular world of this book,
mm-hmm.
which I imagine just can keep happening more and more and more, you know, until whatever happens at the end.
Well, I assume he's just going to publish his book and then that's going to be the end of it. We're going to just
I think he's going to die. I don't think he's ever going to publish the book.
But then, did they already skip ahead? Wasn't that what the first issue covered? That they printed this book and people were flipping out and freaking out over it? Or am I remembering that wrong?
No, he hasn't published the book yet.
No, okay, my mistake.
No. They were, in the first issue, they were discussing another book that had been read.
Yeah.
Released, but it was apparently bullshit.
Hey,
he wouldn't do a real version of it.
This book continues to be alright, not good. What I meant to say is, if not good, but the best book of all time, the greatest book in the history of our industry.
Gotta wait until it's done. And by the way, I reread that. The greatest horror book in the history of comics.
Already they're starting to pedal pack now, I see.
No. That was in the original solicitation.
For
they
issue one?
It. For issue one, they said, in horror comics. Or it might have said in horror, period. But it indicated in horror comics for sure.
Well, with the passing of Wes Craven, I can assure you there's been things that have been scarier than this book.
Hey, Wes Craven did some bad movies.
Yeah, but he did some good ones too.
All
right, let's move on to our next book. Let's see. Let's do War Stories number 12, writer Garth Ennis, art Thomas Airey.
He finished his story. They were able to escape from the SS. Well, they didn't so much escape as the Royal Air Force's planes happened to come by while they were preparing to be tortured. Well, they were being tortured. They were being beaten for information on where everything was. And, you know, the planes came by and they shot at them, so they were able to get away. The guy decided not to kill his commanding officer.
Thank God.
Although he did explain how he ended up in the same regiment as him. What he did was he went to his house, knocked on his door, asked where he was. They told him what unit he joined, and he then went and joined the same unit. So it was not some involved thing, but he basically explained after they'd been through all this, you know, I didn't really think this through.
Remember he said he wasn't even sure he could pull the trigger until he finally confronted him.
Yeah.
He's like, ah.
He might not have killed him anyway.
No.
But then they go out and they have a fight, or they're going to go fight the Germans. And there was some stuff about the Irish soldiers were incredibly unequipped.
Yes. Like there was a reason for that.
Yeah, because the English still hated them. And, you know, he gave factual listings of the number of Irish soldiers who went in and how many from Northern Ireland. And it worked out to about 100,000.
Mm-hmm.
But they were all treated like shit. And then he wrote a thing about when they came back, they were treated like traitors by their own people. Even though, you know, technically they were fighting for their own people. The Germans were not going to stop at Ireland.
No, they were not.
That was not... That was not their goal. They were not like, oh, well, we don't like England because they've been fighting us, but Ireland didn't fight us, so it's okay. that's not what they did. So. But yeah, it was just, you know, and he dedicated it to the memory of all the men who fought, and it was a nice ending. I'm interested to see where he goes next. I hope it's Vietnam.
I think that's where he's waiting for his swan song for this. I think we're going to get other wars, and then eventually, whenever he plans on wrapping this up, at least for a while, we're going to get Vietnam.
He's already done multiple World War II stories. They were completely different,
mm-hmm.
but he's done multiple. So he could do multiple Vietnam stories. I just know that, you know, Ennis loves Vietnam.
Well, most of the media does.
Well, yeah.
It's a sexy war.
It was my favorite storyline in this was the Israel one.
That was a good one. I'll give it to you.
I did like the first World War II one. The one about the planes.
Yeah, that was good as well. In fact, I think that's the peak of the series so far. At least this new series, anyway.
Yeah. So I mean, he's good. But the good thing about this book is, since he's constantly changing wars, he's constantly changing characters. Every story arc is only 3 issues long. The writing is consistently good. So, even if you don't like the setting a lot.
Just give it 2 or 3 issues and you'll get another story.
Yeah, you're going to get a completely different set of characters, a completely different setting with a completely different message, because he's not, you know, this isn't a book saying war is evil.
No, it really is just the stories of all these soldiers. And it really, like I said, it doesn't come with a bias. It doesn't, you know, glorify war, but at the same time, it doesn't, you know, it's almost like a documentary in the sense that it just shows you what war is.
Yeah, they never glorify war, but they never say all war is bad.
Marvel, what were you going to say?
Very careful.
No, you said that they're not sugarcoating it.
There you go. Perfect.
No, they're not. Not at all.
No.
I mean, but that's because all the stories so far have either been from the point of view of a soldier or, in that last arc, it was from civilians during the war. So,
and I mean,
the only way to sugarcoat it is he does a story of like a politician.
and these books really, I mean, see, honestly, they're, you know, the setting is war, but the whole point of the story isn't the war.
No, he uses the war as a setting to tell whatever story he's telling. A couple of them, the story has been the war, mm-hmm. but overall it's focused on either the soldiers or the civilians. It's focused on the people during the war, not the war itself.
Correct.
Yeah. All right. So, good end of the story. I mean, and the only way it could.
All right. Let's move on to our little gem from Boom Studios. Flood number 2, writer Justin Jordan, art by George Cojillo.
John Flood is a terrific. Yes, it was John Flood number 2.
Oh, I got ahead of myself.
John Flood is a terrific new character in comics.
Yeah, I love it.
Yes.
The most fascinating part of this issue was, so they're trying to find this serial killer.
Yeah, the first issue. It's from the same one from the first issue.
Well, it opens up with someone coming to kill John Flood, which had a wonderful reveal at the last page of the issue, by the way. But I found the best part of this issue was when he's talking to his new cop friend and he explains, because he basically said, okay, we're going to go help this woman find her cat.
Yeah.
And he thought, wait, what?
He finds this ridiculous, and he's like, wait, how did you even notice there was a problem with cats missing? And he's like, well, my mind doesn't work the way your mind works. He's like, most people, they go from A to B to C. I go from A to Q to banana.
Yes.
Is how he explained it. And then they had a 2-page spread of how his mind works, where they showed the starting point and then the ending. And like I said, this 2-page spread, the ending point of how you realize cats are missing. And it turned out this lady's cat was captured by a militant PETA member who had decided when they opened the doors, he breaks into his apartment, they walk in, it's just full of cats. And then the guy, you know, he walks in, he's carrying cat food. And he predicted it correctly. The guy felt that people were keeping cats as slaves, and he thought the cats needed to be free and then take their rightful place as the ruler of humans.
Yes.
He was balls crazy.
Yes. He tried to go at the cop with a knife, but the cop whooped his ass.
Yeah, and he's like, wow, you really do like cats. And he's like, well, I more don't like being stabbed. But, and they let all the cats out, and then they let they brought the woman's cat back to her. John Flood did a nice thing. He is a nice fellow.
Yeah, they actually were able to return everybody's cat pretty much by the end.
But the reveal was the whole reason he did this was just to get them out of his house because he knew that guy was breaking into the house to kill him that night. However, when the guy broke in, there's a camera set up and he just has written on the wall, "Now I know what you look like. Thanks."
Awesome.
Picture of him. So he knows, the guy, he doesn't know the guy who's trying to kill him yet, but he knows the face of the man he has sent to kill him.
Correct.
Yeah. So, part of the cat thing also was he said, "Well, I'm trying to collect karma here. So, you know, eventually it'll pay off
down the road."
And also the lady that, they went to visit with, who they, were able to bring her cat back. Apparently her husband is like some
a cop.
Yeah. Was he like a chief or some shit? Or like
he was a cop who was, fairly high up in, where are they? LA?
I think so.
I presume. Yeah, I think that's where they left off in the first issue.
He's high up in the wherever police department. The point of this issue was John Flood is he appears to be crazy, but he's incredibly intelligent.
Yeah. Someone said he's kind of like, I read this somewhere, but a comparison. He's like, Cumberbatch's, Sherlock Holmes.
Sherlock? I've watched that series and it's very good, by the way.
we need to learn a way in whether or not it's good or not.
This is more, he's crazier than that. Sherlock in that BBC show, he does come off a little wacky, not to this degree. But they did in that show, they do the clever things where they show how he makes connections no one else can make. But the thing is that Sherlock was never shown to plan, you know, 80 steps ahead, which is what John Flood appears to be doing. Everything he does, no matter how random it seems, is for a purpose.
Yes.
You know, finding the cats, yes, it's for karma, but the side note was he got in good with the wife of the police chief. It also got him and his partner out of the house so that not only was he safe, but he could get the picture of the guy who was trying to kill him so he knew who he was. Every single thing he did in this issue was for a purpose.
Yes.
And that takes some quality writing to pull off in a logical way.
And also we got a little bit of they're slowly teasing what it was cop guy.
No, they're not slowly teasing. They pretty much gave out what he did. He asked him, you know, "Why aren't you a cop anymore?" or something like that. Like, what did you do? Because you're a good cop. And then he had the flashback where there was a guy and he was on the step with him and he's like, "All right, Ted, where's your family?" And he walks into the house. And we see a children's bedroom and there's blood everywhere.
Correct.
And then he goes back out. Presumably he beat the shit out of this guy.
Yeah, but in the first issue, didn't they mention that they kind of like teased it was something more like a bomb and it killed a lot of people, but he was exonerated?
They could be building a case, you know, where they show all these instances of what he's done in the past, so.
Yeah, it could be that too.
Maybe it was a group of things, but I mean, if he beats the shit out of this guy, that's technically wrong because he's a cop, but the guy had just murdered his infant children.
And the way that people were reacting in that diner when they recognized that one guy, or the one lady when she recognized him, it didn't come off as, the way she was making fun of him was like it was a negative, and I don't think anybody would really, you know, harp on a guy if he decides to slap around a psychopath.
But she wasn't scared of him.
Yeah, that's why I think it has to be something else.
Could be.
No one would frown upon this, basically.
We'll find out. There are two characters in this book that matter.
Yes. So. All right. Let's move on to our next book. Another book from, boom, I got ahead of myself saying it's a jam, but, Broken World number 4, writer Frank Barbary, art by Christopher Peterson.
Broken World number 4, our problem with this, we said, was how are they gonna wrap this up? They did wrap it up in a fairly unsatisfying way.
Yes, the answer to how they were going to wrap it up, the answer was poorly.
Yes.
I mean, I guess they tied up some loose... Well, they didn't...
The military guy, as military guys always are in post-apocalyptic stories, was balls crazy.
Yes.
The entire military was not. He basically sent her on a mission to kill the leader of the Children of the Apocalypse.
Who apparently turned over a new leaf, even though she was about to kill him.
yeah, that guy felt bad about what he did. He ended up not having the courage to kill himself.
Yeah, you can see him. He was starting to hook himself up to one of those suicide machines, and then she just yells at him. He's like, "Don't you pull that trigger on that suicide machine?"
And his backstory was just he was a preacher who went crazy and convinced people that, you know, they should all kill themselves because it's what God wants.
Yeah.
Even though the Bible tells you you're not supposed to kill yourself. But people who follow religion often don't read the Bible.
Well, it was more so that there were these wacky times where people didn't know what was going on. So a guy like that pretending to be a preacher could probably get people to do anything. Well,
but she ends up in the rocket test site and it's full of food and supplies. The guy sent her there. He was going to kill her.
It was like a silo. She thought it was the rocket. So she's all, how do you get in? And instead that they're examining, there was like a binder. And in the binder, it just shows that there was food and supplies and that there wasn't really a rocket there.
There was a lot of stuff that didn't make sense here. Like, and they even brought it up. Why was this thing set up with the intent of you thinking that you're going to be able to escape the Earth, but really it's just a bomb shelter?
Yeah.
And there were several people who had this information because obviously that one militant guy was there.
Yeah. So he shows up and the children of the apocalypse are there and she's there and he's, you know, oh, we're going to kill them all. And they end up having a fight and the children will not fight back because they are a religious cult. But they will not fight back. But then the one of the kids.
Yeah. Emma, she ends up shooting the guy.
Yeah. She shoots the guy, which leads to the children and the military getting together. And 2 years later, they have formed the New Earth Alliance and are rebuilding Earth. But it says she never saw her family again because they were on the ships, which presumably went away to the planet they found to resettle on since Earth was destroyed, even though it wasn't destroyed. We saw none of this. We saw nothing of how the Earth was rebuilt. We never saw how anything else in the world reacted to this, which we were never going to see.
They teased why she wasn't able to get on the rocket. But we'll never find out. Yeah, we'll never find out why.
If they do
a lot of things that they just kind of like.
If they do a sequel to this, I will read it.
I would like for it to be a sequel because I'd like to know more.
The most interesting parts were not dealt with. Some of it was hinted at. A lot of it was never even hinted at. It had a 2-page wrap up where they had to skip ahead in time to basically say, oh, they gave it a happy ending, somewhat. It was
somewhat,
yeah.
Kind of a little depressing too, because they lead you to believe, oh, she never saw her family again.
Yeah, she never saw her family again, at least 2 years in the future. But the Earth continued on, and apparently people were all right.
Oh, that was a bummer when they mentioned that she never saw her family again.
Yeah, but that was the only negative. But presumably her family's alive, and presumably the world is doing just fine. So that was nice, but it was too quick to wrap up. We never got to see how all of this worked out. We saw basically nothing because he didn't have the time, so that was disappointing.
Yes.
However, I will let that lead into the empty number 6.
Yeah, you ripped the words right out of my mouth. From going from one unsatisfying ending to a somewhat satisfying ending, empty number 6.
This had a much more satisfying ending. The most unsatisfying thing about this series is apparently over.
Yes, it's writer and artist Jimmy Robinson, and this is empty issue 6.
Who the last page of the book, it revealed, hey, doing something else. Doing another series.
Nothing related to this series or this, you know, this world that they've been establishing.
Scientist chick revealed absolutely everything that went on. What happened was, at some point in human history, they discovered how to harness dark matter to fix all of the world's problems. They cured all diseases. They solved world hunger.
Yes.
They solved all the energy problems. And then they set up a group, but the problem was that led to overpopulation.
Mm-hmm.
Because no one was dying anymore. Well, they were dying, presumably. But, you know, there was no cancer anymore. There was no starvation anymore. There was no diseases to kill people anymore. And therefore, there was overpopulation. So they picked 6 people to come up with a plan to terraform the world. A new world. so that, you know, they could send people somewhere to live because they'd run out of room.
Yes.
However, so they put them in these little, the deals that they found them in, but something went wrong. They were trying to perfectly recreate Earth. However, what they did caused the dark matter that they were collecting to seep out and completely fuck the world, except for the one island that she was testing on, which is where Leela, the big long neck chick, lived. Mm-hmm. That is why her world, her area of the world was fine. Also, the reason that she could bring things back to life was because all of this energy had been diverted to her section. She could, in effect, control this dark matter and use it to do all the miraculous things.
Yeah, because she had lived there for so long, most of her adult life, that when she finally went into the empty, she was able to cultivate whatever dark matter that was in the land, and that's how she made things grow and whatnot, brought people back to life, was able to understand other languages because she was living in a country where she absorbed all the positive energy from the dark matter.
Yes. But the lady they found in the bunker revealed that I can fix the world. I could put it back the way it was, but I have to destroy this place to do it. Also, in doing that, it'll reestablish balance, which means your people on your island, number one, you will lose your powers. Number two, they will have to deal with, you know, natural disasters. Their world will no longer be perfect. It was basically, there was like a little protection field around it.
Yeah, it was the way she described it, and I thought it was perfect. It was like the eye of the hurricane. Like everything else around it was being destroyed, but because for whatever reason why the error of the computer, her areas was untouched.
Right, but since she was going to fix the world and restore the balance, her area would then be prone to everything bad.
You got the feeling that whatever that island was supposed to be wasn't quite right, so the fact that she was going to turn off the machine was going to create whatever artificial environment was in that area. It was going to go back to being normal.
Right. So everything would be normal again, or at least.
So when she turned it off, you saw tornadoes, and you saw all these things destroying the land. But you knew ultimately the world would be restored back to normal. So in the end, you'd probably get something good.
It wasn't going to kill them out, but their lives are going to be harder because they didn't have fucking magical powers anymore. The side story on this was the evil guy who had tried to kill her had completely lost his shit at this point. She lands on the island in like a little spaceship, basically to warn them that this was going to go down. They weren't going to stop it from happening. She had no choice in the matter. It was going to happen regardless, and it in fact did happen while she was talking to him. But the crazy royal did not want things to change because he had a very comfortable life and was like, oh, kill her. She's a traitor and a heretic and blah, 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 blah. But he got killed. So, and then because the only tall building, which, you know, tall buildings do not get knocked down by tornadoes. That is a fact. It's something to do with the way the wind blows or whatever. But you're seeing all the low standing buildings, the farm buildings and stuff, their little houses are all getting destroyed. And they're like, we'll let everybody in because they're all going to die otherwise. It's fucking dangerous out here. And he's like, no, they're not royals. Which is such a shit thing to do. And she's like, you're going to let all these people die because you don't want royals to be in there? Fuck you. So he gets killed. All the people go in. We get a quick wrap up where Bunny Dog Man is going to go back to his people and be a hero because the world's saved.
Mm-hmm.
Long Arm Chick is going to go back to her people. And everything can grow now, so their lives are going to be better, so she's going to get to let them know. And Leela, presumably, will stay with her people and help them deal with these new problems, the fact that their lives are no longer perfect, but that's okay, because that's the way things are supposed to be. And, yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah, so, great book.
It was a good ending. I'm sad we don't get to see the reconstruction of the world, much like in Broken World. But at least absolutely everything was explained to us, and we got a happy resolution for all the characters that we were introduced to. Yeah, I was happy with the end of this, but I'm sad it's over.
Yeah, it felt a little abrupt, but we did in fact get a bit of an ending, so we can't sit here and complain how they completely left us hanging. But At the same time,
it wasn't in just one issue either, because in the previous issue they had given us the build up to this. This is just the resolution.
Yeah, and it's something to where if they want to revisit it, they would have absolutely no problem.
Yeah, they could. And I wonder if the bug people will continue to live in this new world.
I think when they turn off the dark matter thing, the giant jive talking bugs will cease to exist.
That's very sad.
They don't normally exist in nature. So
they turned out not to be bad in the end.
I'm just saying we don't see them in real life. So when they turn off this dark matter thing, I presume they will in fact go away.
Since somebody else was controlling that part of the world, apparently they thought jive talking bugs would be cool. So it did completely explain why they would talk like a group of people from our current world. I mean, it had already pretty much been revealed at that point, because this current incarnation of the world had been constructed by, you know, people from not our time period, but a version of our time period. So everything was explained. Everything was resolved. The Empty was a success, in my opinion.
Yes, as did I. So if you haven't read this book, by all means, when it comes out in graphic novel form, and I presume they're going to stick all six issues into one graphic novel, by all means, go out of your way to pick that up.
Yeah, give it a shot. The art was good. It's weird looking, but it's meant to be weird looking. It was enjoyable. The characters who were introduced were not super developed, but they were developed enough. I liked it.
Yeah, so did I. All right, let's move on to our next book, Jupiter's Circle number 6, writer Mark Miller, art by David Gilafelice.
This book took me two minutes to read.
Yeah, pretty much.
But instead of making me hate it, I was just bored by the entire thing. So
Miller improved. In the last issue, if you remember George, he had a fiance that he would propose to, and she said no, and she ended up getting with Walter. Well, in this issue, George is all outraged because his ex-fiance was with Walter, and he's convinced himself that Walter is using his telepathic powers to steal her in order to get back at him.
Mm-hmm.
So this leads to George deciding to give up being a superhero and starting a new life anonymously as a normal person. And that's kind of like where they left it.
that's not Marvel, you know, forgetting certain stuff, leaving stuff out. No, that was pretty much the whole issue.
Yep.
You know what? I'm not a big fan of this current arc as I was the last one. But with that said, it's a decent book. It's right in the middle.
The art sucks.
Last issue, I sort of agree with you. This issue, it didn't bother me as much.
The artist has no... This book exists because Jupiter's Legacy was doing fairly well.
Uh-huh.
But Frank quietly can't keep a schedule.
No, he cannot. When was the last time we got a issue of Jupiter's Legacy? 2-3 months ago?
It's been a long time.
Yeah.
He's always been slow. It's always been an issue with him. Everybody knows that. I give Miller credit for realizing he had a hit on his hands and trying to continue it.
But here's the problem, with his art, Quietly's art. It's not worth the wait. This isn't Prelude to Sandman, where, you know, it takes forever for the book to come out, but once it comes out, the art is gorgeous.
No, it's not J.G. Jones. He's not the most fantastic artist on earth, but he is a good artist. He just has a certain style. That style is everybody looks really fucking ugly. And they all have the same face. However, his action scenes are very good. His character designs are very good. He is, in fact, a good artist, although not completely to everyone's taste, as Fat Man just put out. I personally really like him. A lot of people do. But he can't keep a schedule, so we got this.
I don't think it's bad. It's just, it's like literally middle of the road, just, okay, it's comic book art, and I have no problem with it, but it's not worth the wait.
However, this art is very much just, it's comic book art. Nothing is well defined. Everything looks kind of murky. It looks like it was rushed artwork, which it should not be, since the series only exists to give us something while the real book continues.
And maybe that's why it comes out on time.
I don't like any of the characters still, because they're Mark Miller characters, and they all have to either be boring and bland or snarky and annoying.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently it's going to continue, which I'm never going to have anything positive to say about.
Then why do you keep reading it? I'm not ripping on you. I'm just genuinely curious.
Well, because we had that one issue where apparently it was very entertaining, where I completely ripped it apart and shit all over Mark Miller.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's just boring.
Do you just like reading it so you can rip on Mark Miller?
Yeah, but now it's boring, so I'm not going to.
Oh, okay.
And I did. I skipped an issue at one point and missed nothing. So,
okay. So if you want your angry reviews of Jupiter's Legacy, you know where to come.
Yeah, maybe. Well, see, but I didn't hate Jupiter's Legacy. I just thought he's doing the same thing he always does. Is this man ever going to do anything different? I don't think so.
All right. I'm not gonna. It's not like the last arc where I absolutely loved it and I was over the moon with it. No, I'm not gonna sit here and fight you.
Jupiter's Legacy, I will continue to give a shot. Jupiter Circle, I am completely done with. This book has no real reason to exist.
All right, next book. A book I have to imagine you think has a very good reason to exist in the fact that it's very good. Lazarus 19, writer Greg Rucka, art by Michael Lark.
Yeah, the issue opens up.
Forever, she's on a mission with her little team on the front lines, and she ends up getting shot in the head and presumed dead.
Her team is completely shitting their pants because they were fairly worthless, and Forever was the only thing actually moving them forward. The team back home, which is the whole thing where they raised up that guy who had some skill in the specific thing that was wrong with him, get sidetracked from doing his job because they realize, shit, Forever's there. She's not waking up. What the hell is going on? We're cutting back and forth both between the not really leader, but the current leader of the Carlisle family, who is a whiny milksop, and the team Forever has left behind, which luckily there's one capable person who is able to take charge and move them forward in destroying the anti-air missiles that are causing the problems down there in Duluth, Minnesota, which is currently contested territory. But we get a few things revealed. The Bittner, Sonia Bittner.
Yes.
Who is their Lazarus. All the Lazaruses are different, by the way. This was revealed in a previous issue because all the different families have different technology. They have different focuses and all that. So it was different. However, she is with the Carlisles now, so she is being fed whatever drugs make Forever better. And also keep her mind controlled.
Yes.
But the family member who is monitoring Forever realized, wait a minute, she hasn't been taking her pills.
Yes. Hence why she hasn't been,
she didn't get up right away.
And also why she's been disregarding like some of the orders from like her sister and stuff like that.
Yeah, but they weren't totally sure on that. But the guy finally realized, wait a minute, she's not taking her pills. That's why she hasn't woken up yet, but not taking her pills did not prevent her from coming back.
It made things a little more difficult for them when they were trying to bring her back.
It slows it down.
Yeah, it slows it down, which is what he realized. And when he realized that, she suddenly comes back to life.
And I love the way they did it. They showed like a little like sidebar thing where they showed her body temperature. And when she was dead, she was like 22. And then when she started coming back to life, it shot up to like 33, and then eventually it came up to like 75 or 80 something. So
as soon as she comes back up, when the Hawk forces have recovered the body and are very excited, she murders all of them very effectively in a very fun couple pages.
There's also something going on with the sister, who's she's hired some guy to basically retrieve Forever, right?
Yes, her sister, who we already had the heel turn on.
Yes.
She is turning against family. She was basically going to sell her, right?
Yeah, he says, your order is to recruit her because, if you tell the truth, she has to listen to her because she has to do whatever the sister says. So they would make their way to, Duluth. Vancouver. Wasn't it in Vancouver?
No, I'm saying
that's where it's supposed to take her to.
Yes, but she apparently doesn't know that Forever is back up.
No.
But we don't know if Forever is going to be 100% right after all this.
Forever
just wakes up and is commenting on the pain, but that guy is walking through Seattle, which is where they currently, or no, they met in Seattle. Yeah, so yeah, maybe Seattle. You're right. They were in Vancouver. But he's walking through the hall.
Well, I don't know if they were in Vancouver. They said.
It doesn't matter where the location is. The guy is there.
No, I'm just saying that's where they're supposed to take her. There's a secret location in Vancouver where they're going to auction her off the highest bidder. And then she says, and at the end of the day, we're just going to side with the winners.
but that's everything that happened in this issue. The brother who's in charge of the family is continuing to be worthless. He doesn't even have access to his dad's files, he revealed in this. So they were like, well, we need to do the go through the protocol, which was basically recover her body and bring it back. He didn't even know what it was.
No. All right. Are you guys still there? I'm sorry. I thought somebody was fiddling with their microphones. I thought maybe we lost somebody.
It was me. I turned up. Oh, wait. Hold on. Lauren is apparently going to bed.
Okay. Just making sure we don't lose you.
Yeah. Let me say goodnight to her.
All right,
I like this issue. It moved everything forward. The family now knows that Forever's not taking her pills. So what's going to happen? We don't know. There's still problems because the dad's not there, but the story has moved forward.
Okay. Do you want us to take a break or do you want to continue with our reviews? Let's see if he's still there.
What's your next book?
It's, We Stand on Guard number 3.
Take a break.
Okay.
All right. It won't be a long break. I just got to say goodnight.
All right. For the listener, no time will have passed, but for us, we're going to wait for Aluro to finish talking to his wife and say goodnight to her. All right. And we're taking the pause as of now, Marvel. All right. For the listener, no time has passed, but for us, we're going to continue our review of We Stand on Guard number 3. Our writer, Brian K. Vaughan, art by Steve. Oh, God. Let me try. Let me try before we do this. Scrosi. Scrosi?
I think it's just Scrosi.
Scrosi? Okay.
Yeah.
Or Scros.
No, you're probably right.
This issue has our heroic band named the 2-4. They're struggling with indecision as the chief who was captured in the last issue. Remember, she was left for dead, but they were able to capture her and, I guess, revive her.
Yeah.
The crew, they argue over what course to take.
Leave or stay because they don't know if she's given them up or not.
Yeah. So the chief is put through her paces and then some. It was quite frankly some pretty disturbing torture. Which included being drowned and burned alive repeatedly, but this was by means of a matrix style mind link that her torturers use liberally, because technically they are taking excellent care of her body and the torture is just a digital construct.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's not a surprise to her. They told her this.
Yes.
The American chick, the older black lady who's, you know, bald and is hardcore as fuck. Flat out told her, this is all virtual reality, you're not really here, however, I'm going to light this barrel of gasoline on fire and fucking shove you in it, and your skin is going to burn off your face and you're going to feel it. It's not really happening.
Okay, that was my question. I'm like, is she just going to get the sensation to where it's like, it's so real, she thinks it's real, or is she actually going to feel the pain from being thrown into the fire?
It doesn't matter, because pain is created by your mind. Pain is there to tell your body something is wrong. You can't die from pain, but you can pass out from it, because the pain is just signals being sent to your head saying, ouch, this hurts, you should get away from this situation. That is what pain is. But because it's not actually happening to her and she's in good care, they can do it all day long. But they said they went through like 8 cycles. So now we got to turn to psychological. Bringing her dead dad back to life, and her dead dad is going to repeatedly rape her she gives up the information. She realizes she cannot, she cannot take this, and she gives them up.
Yeah. Like immediately after, before they can start anything. The just from the fact that they brought it up and they said they were going to do it was enough for her to cave in.
Yeah, and at the same time, because she doesn't want the the memory of her dead father to be ruined.
Okay, because I read it sort of in a different way in the sense that maybe he did this to her and she wanted to block that out of her memory. Okay.
No.
But since this is happening in her head, even though it didn't really happen, the memory would still be there. She didn't want to go through it. She gave them up. She cannot do that. Also, the Americans are fucking dicks.
And they're very technologically advanced, as the end of the issue showed. They have these floating fortresses and shit.
Yeah, which again, the art in this is pretty goddamn good. He draws his people are they tend to be fairly well drawn. The critique on this guy in the past is he tended towards cheesecake a little too much. he did a little bit of that in the last issue.
You won't get complaints from that from me.
But this issue was more focused on the torture and what was going on with the survivors. Our very pretty little grown up redhead.
Okay, I can't ignore it anymore. One of you guys is buzzing.
That's not me.
Okay,
that's me. That's the bugs. That's actual buzzing because I'm outside. Okay. So I'm sorry. I will be.
They sound awfully. Though. They sound awfully loud. Like, what kind of bugs are we talking?
That noise?
Yeah.
Locusts.
Locusts are just a common thing in your neck of the woods?
Yeah, I live in the Midwest, dude. We got farms. That's where locusts live, and they buzz. And then, you know, eventually they shed their shells or they die or whatever they do.
Okay.
It's not a problem. We don't have, like, well, we do have swarms of them, actually. That's a big problem. It happens, and they eat the crops, but we don't have that here because, you know, I live in a city, and there's not that
okay,
many
this,
of them.
The sooner you can come in, the better, but if this continues, I can always edit this out in post.
All right, tell you what. I'm inside right now. Is it gone?
Oh, yes, it's gone.
My California podcast friends are disturbed by the sound of locusts.
Marvel lives in Texas.
Oh, sorry. My California friend Marvel did not seem to care. I don't know if they have them down there. You probably don't have them that much, though, right? Because
I've never even seen a locust.
Well, it's too hot where you live. It's
my only context for locusts is Locar.
And they'd all die anyway because there's no water.
I don't know what's going on with Lura. Probably talking to the wife again.
Yeah, right, Jack's looking for tum-tums, as he calls tums.
Next book.
Okay, Imperium number 8, writer Joshua Dysart, art by Scott Eaton.
This was best the best issue of Imperium so far.
Yeah, this is definitely the best issue so far.
Do you know why it was the best issue?
Why?
No.
Because it focused 100% on Harada, who is the most interesting character this entire book exists to get him over.
It's funny because I read the first issue with Harada, and everything that this book reminded me why I normally don't read this book, because he's a terrible human being. And when you have a book whose main character is a horrible human being, you tend not to want to read it.
Well, he's technically not, because he wants the world to be perfect.
But that is why he's a good villain. This is what I always talk about.
But the reason why he's a villain
are the villains who think they're doing right.
Yeah, and the reason why he's in fact a villain, even though he wants the world to be better, he's willing to do anything. He wants it by any means necessary. So he's willing to kill people.
In his discussion with Divinity in this issue, Divinity pointed out, you have to have control. That is his character flaw. That is what makes him a villain. Does he want what's best for the world?
Or what's best, or he wants to be the
world's
savior.
He wants, yes, that's the thing. He wants what's best for the world in his view, and he has to be the one who created what was best for the world.
Because if you remember the last issue, he did create that perfect world for him, but he wasn't in control of it.
And he revealed when he said before he knows how to beat Divinity, he sort of does. Divinity, while he has all these powers, is still a man, and therefore he is still susceptible to mind fuckery.
Yes.
Which is what Harada did to him. He brought in his family, his dead family, and had them talk to him. But Divinity eventually broke free. It did work on him, but he eventually broke free. He'd been, you know, time fucking him, sending him all through time over and over again. But he puts him back to the point before they originally met him. And Harada said, you know, they're like, oh, we found this, this thing and we got to go get it. And Harada cancels it. And he's like, no, we focus on one thing at a time. We're going to keep working on our cold fusion reactor or whatever they were going to do. That's what we're doing. We'll worry about that later.
Yeah, because he wants to recruit him. He knows he can use him, but he's kind of like he's taking a step back at the moment.
He's not ready yet. So he's working on planning with the takeaway being when he's ready to do this, he's going to get him and use him for his own purposes.
Oh, God. I hate this man.
Eventually, I told you this book will end, but when it ends, it's going to end with whatever that big Valiant crossover that they keep doing. There will eventually be one where it's everyone against Harada, who has gotten to the point possibly with Divinity where he can move forward in his plans and Unity goes after him or whatever.
They left some stuff open with at the end. The robot had saved one of the people from that that submarine. She's one of the MI6 people.
Yeah, and he's creepy. He's a robot, but he's like, you know what? I could save one person, but I'm going to keep you, and I'll feed you, and I'll keep you safe, and I'll rub your head, and I'll call you Bob. That kind of thing.
Well, he said eventually he'll That's let cute. Her go.
He said that.
Yeah, he said that.
We have no reason to trust him, though. He's creepy, though. Yeah, he kept her in his chest because inside him he's got a little thing that could heal her, and then he let her out, and he's kind of gaping at her creepily, and she's scared shitless. The head of the anti-Harada forces is alive now and still a dick. Because that's the thing. That guy, since Harada is our point of view character, that guy who thinks he's a good guy, and he is, he's still an incredible dick.
Yes.
But he's technically the good guy in this story. So you got that going on, because what he's doing is, it's fair. As Fat Man said, you're not supposed to like Harada. He is a bad guy. But since he's the main character, the guy coming after him, even though he's the good guy, has to be a bad guy.
Yes.
So that's what they're doing.
It's a total dick. You can't really get behind him. It's like, yeah, he's a good guy, but it's like,
It's a book where you want to see the main character fail and fall flat in his face, and I don't know if that makes for a good book necessarily.
When he finally comes out as the lead villain, you're going to have a complete understanding of the character. It's a really clever thing to do. It's a slow build because he has his own book. We never read Harbinger, but we found out apparently that book was about Harada and the Psyots. But we never read that. But that's why it ended. It ended, and they did Harbinger Wars or whatever they did, but Harada continues on. So that's what we got going on. But this was a good issue. A lot happened, and it was a crossover between those two stories, and we saw Divinity's current place, more of what he could do.
Yes, and because the crossover is over, I can stop reading this book.
I'm going to keep reading it because I like this issue.
I like this issue so much I'm going to continue to read.
Okay, because initially before, I think we all three gave it a try. Me and Marvel didn't like it. Laura continued the lightning around it. And that's where, and they announced that they were doing this crossover, and we read a couple of issues before the crossover because we thought, oh, this is going to be the crossover. But eventually we got to the crossover, and now that's over, I don't want to read it because I hate Harada. I'm looking forward to him making a giant heel and him getting his ass kicked by the good guys.
You like him as a heel, but because you like him as a heel, you don't like him and you don't want to read his book. But the crossover succeeded, and what its goal probably was, it got at least one new reader.
Yeah.
So, a success in that way.
Although, by the way, this is one of their, I think this might be Valiant's least selling book, by the way.
That wouldn't shock me.
Well, we'll see if this crossover thing helped it.
Because last month I think it did a little over 5,000 copies.
Oof. Well, because it's a hard book, but it's not like all of their books are selling 50,000 copies. Book of Death did very well. Overall, Valiant, the books don't sell that well from what we can see. We don't know how they do digitally. We don't know, you know, how they do outside Amazon and trades. They continue to publish it, so presumably it's doing good enough that they're making money off of it.
And good for them. They deserve it.
No, they do. But, I mean, yeah, this entire book is to build up a future villain.
I feel kind of sad that this week's comics is the only Valiant book we had. So I'm a little bummed in that sense because we're big fans of Valiant, and for us to only get one book.
Occasionally we have a week where there isn't a Valiant book.
I know. Those are always sad weeks.
Yeah, and I mean when Book of Death ends, we'll have quite a few weeks of Valiant books. Although Valiant is good about introducing new titles.
Yeah. So. Have I shown you that one Dropbox commercial for Valiant?
Yeah. Yeah, you linked it.
It's great.
It's funny. Yeah, so this was the best issue of Imperium, yes. And me and Marvel will be reviewing this, and we'll get regular reviews of it, unless Marvel drops it.
Yes, which he may, because he dropped it before.
He could. Well, there's always a risk that books will get dropped.
All right, so. Let's move on to our next book, Daredevil 18, the conclusion of the run from writer Mark Waid and art by Chris Samnee.
Did you notice this was born again inverted?
Yes, I completely, that's the first thing that came to mind.
Didn't they already do that though? Like what was Marvel told me, I think, about this before. They had done something like this before with Kingpin?
No.
No, not quite.
Okay.
They did a story where, Kingpin was murdered.
They did a story where he got his comeuppance.
Yeah, he wasn't killed. All of his criminal heads came up on him and they Caesared him, where, you know, they all stabbed him and left him for dead. But it turns out he didn't die. And then Daredevil announced he was the new Kingpin. But in this, we got a situation where everything was taken away from Kingpin. He got the shit kicked out of him by Daredevil because Daredevil won, because Daredevil is the hero. All of his, illegal acts.
Yeah, criminal activities and secret bank accounts.
Were made known to everyone, but we got the little black line of text that he wasn't dead, and he's gonna be coming back.
Yes.
Which is a setup for, you know, Charles Soule's gonna be writing Daredevil, it's gonna come back as a new series, but he can then bring Kingpin back. But, I mean, that's what it was. Daredevil completely broke him down and took everything away from him, which is what he did to Daredevil in Born Again.
Spoilers.
There's a lot of good stuff in this book.
Yeah. And then the last issue, remember, Ikari had died. So he used his costume to pretend to be Ikari and confront Kingpin.
Yeah. And he was trying not to talk a lot, but he said, you know, since, you know, I got my powers and, you know, I really listen to people's voices. So that gives me the ability to mimic the voices.
Correct.
Not perfectly like the other blind girl. She could tell that's Shroud's wife.
Carpenter. Jessica Carpenter. That's the former Spider-Woman.
Yes.
Yeah, she could hear that it was him, which is what he was hoping, because he was being a dick and
yes.
He ripped into Foggy pretty badly.
he wasn't trying to blow his cover, so that's why he was kind of a dick to Foggy.
Yeah, he had to make Kingpin, you know, trust him but then, you know, Kingpin gets to a point where he's like, you know, basically you had to bring me the body, and he just brought him the mask.
The cow.
And then and Kingpin realized it was him, and that he punched him.
Question, why didn't you just put Ikari in the Daredevil suit? He doesn't, he could have took off the mask.
No, because he knows no,
The body was, remember, the body was like disintegrated or some shit. They never found the body. They mentioned that at the end.
Yeah. Because they didn't want to kill. Mark Waid didn't want to take toys away from Charles Soule.
Got it.
Is a lot of, this was a very satisfactory end to Mark Waid's run, but he didn't want to do anything to the character that would ruin him for the next.
Although he kind of did, in the sense that Daredevil's out with his secret identity, and he's out.
He
can't go back to New York. That.
It looks like they lost their practice.
Yes.
Yeah, because all the information had been of all his meetings had been recorded, so he was kind of a disgraced lawyer. He also had a he had kind of a bit of a breakdown moment where, his girlfriend had said to him, you know, Bob, you're Mac Murdock. You're the man without fear. And he cuts her off and he's like, shut up. Don't say that. He's like, do you guys not understand? The entire reason I gave up my identity was because my secret identity, all these problems I had with Kingpin was because he found out my secret identity and he used it against me. And he said something to the effect of, I'm not fearless. My way of doing it was God, what did he say? It was very well written and I don't have the book in front of me. He gave an explanation of why he did everything. And he basically said he's not actually fearless.
Yeah, there was let me see if I can find it.
I forget
it.
The exact verbiage, but,
it was good though. It was a good explanation.
Okay. You're really hung up on this, but it wasn't that big a deal to me, but I think Marvel's investigating it. So
it was important because that is what Wade had been dealing with for most of his run with Daredevil. Mm-hmm. And he had Daredevil put everything into words.
Well, while Marvel's investigating that, you brought up the term important. We had something important really happen this issue. Kind of a big thing, really. Foggy's cancer went into remission.
Yeah.
Yep.
But that was the kind of thing we were kind of, will he or won't he kill off Foggy with the cancer
that
scare?
That was him somewhat reestablishing the status quo. We don't have to worry about Foggy dying now. Foggy can be healthy again.
Oh, the part where you're talking about, he says, I was never being honest except on my terms. I was being defiant. This is the secret to being fearless, okay? You attack a problem before it can attack you. Outing myself that hard and that thoroughly wasn't an act of integrity. It was recklessness. It was an attempt to out-clever everyone, to take my secrets out of the mix before they could be used against me. That's all. And it backfired. That was my ammo. That was our protection.
Yeah. And our protection is gone.
Yeah.
Correct.
Because he showed that it... Even though he tried to outsmart everyone, it didn't matter.
No.
He could still be attacked through his friends. Everything was still for nothing. Even though, you know, in the end, it worked out. He used... Oh, and by the way, how they got Fisk was, aside from him beating him in a fight, Al's daughter was with Shroud, and she got Al back, and she basically told him to use his I control all the... everything in the city. He released all of that information basically to everyone's TVs.
Yeah.
So that everyone in the city knew where Fisk was, everything he'd been doing. He was completely outed, and the Fed showed up to arrest him and did.
No, at the end, he also apparently they went to a press conference, I guess, for his book release.
Yeah, he had to his her dad made him hold a press conference to deal with all the, you know, all his client information being released and all that. He had to do a press conference basically to apologize and explain everything. It was a requirement for him going forward with releasing the book. So he forced him to hold a press conference.
I'm sad that this has ended.
I really like Charles Soule.
Yes, I imagine the Charles Soule stuff would just be equally as good. So.
And he's writing, he's a lawyer who's writing a lawyer, and people said, well, what about She-Hulk? If you remember, everyone spoke incredibly highly of the writing in She-Hulk overall.
It was the art that was that series of
Achilles. That was why we dropped it. We liked that book. We hated the art so much we couldn't read it anymore.
Yeah. So. I'm eagerly anticipating this new run. And it's not like Mark Waid's going anywhere. You know, post-Secret Wars, he's going to be writing Avengers.
Yeah, he's still with Marvel. He's still around. It's just... And I think he did. He did everything he wanted to do with this character. He did everything he could do. He took Daredevil away from, you know, Matt Murdock being this fucking depressive, just everything has to be bad in his life and he's always miserable. He put a stop to that for the first time in about 30 years.
Thank God, by the way. Not that it wasn't great, but it's just nice that you finally do something different with the character.
No, it was.
Not even 30 years, more than 30 years. We're talking like the 60s. We're talking like almost 50.
Yeah, but he was always kind of like that, but it was really kicked up with Frank Miller. And, you know, Frank Miller wrote the seminal run on Daredevil, and then everybody had to follow along. Even when Bendis had his really good run, he was still doing the Matt Murdock as a horrible, depressive bastard. So, Wade took us away from that. Maybe Soul will continue it. Maybe he won't. Maybe he'll bring some of the darkness back.
Nice.
Maybe he'll fight Batroc the Leaper.
That'd be great.
I don't know if Charles Soule is an MMA fan. Yeah, but no, this was a good end.
Okay. Let's move on to our next book, Future Imperfect number 5. Writer Peter David, art Greg Land.
I wanted a lightning round this.
Yeah, this I can pretty much explain this pretty quickly. Maestro met what's his name? Rick Jones, who was the Ancient One.
Mm-hmm.
And Maestro fuses with the Destroyer, and he defeats Doom, only for us to discover that it was all a dream due to Banner being in a wishing well or some garbage like that. He imagines his greatest desire.
It's from a previous Hulk story that David wrote. This concept of the wishing well that. It grants your wishes, but only for you in your head.
And he's going to be trapped there forever, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he thinks he's taken over the world and he's going to be a benevolent leader. And he turned back into Banner.
Yes.
And yeah. So we got a resolution to the story, sort of. We saw a fight between Maestro and Doom, but it didn't actually happen. It doesn't matter. Doom would have completely killed him. He's God. It's fine that he thinks he won.
I'm sure there's some people who would have question with that.
It was all a dream.
Because Doom is such a jobber.
The story wasn't... Yeah, I know. Doom is such a jobber.
compared to Maestro.
And Maestro is Hulk, and Hulk is strongest one there is, and he could have punched God to death.
We'll never get a resolution to whether they were able to take back Dystopia back, and whether
it doesn't matter because Secret Wars is ending in a couple months.
Although you know what though, he's in another book, isn't he? In another book right now?
He showed up in wasn't it A-Force?
Might have been A. I don't know. It might have been A-Force.
No, it was Inhumans. It was Attila and Rising.
There we go. That's the book.
Oh, yeah.
The leftover Inhumans, they washed up on the shore and Maestro was there.
Yeah.
But that could have happened before this Future Imperfect book as well.
That doesn't matter. Don't get bogged down because it could be a different, Maestro. It doesn't matter. That'll work.
Okay. I'm not going to fight you with that, but I just think maybe it was further down the timeline, but it doesn't matter. Yeah. All right, next book, Groot number 4, writer Jeff Loveness, art by Brian Kessinger. What's so funny?
This book was funny.
It's a cute book.
Groot assembled a team of idiots to go rescue Rocket. His team included Mantron, a robot who was apparently built in the 70s, who ran on floppy disks. Which is high comedy in the book when he's defending a gas station
mm-hmm.
on a planet called Earthk.
there's a Will Smith joke there, but I'm not going to make it.
Some idiot Skrulls invaded thinking it was Earth,
mm-hmm.
realized it wasn't Earth, it was Earthk, and got very depressed. But he decided to bring them with him. That was the funniest part of the book, though, is Mantron decides he has to fight them, so he activates his battle mode, which involves him pulling out a floppy disk, inserting it into himself. But since he is a old-fashioned robot, it takes him an incredibly long time to boot up the disk.
It took about 5 minutes of him just sitting there, and all that would appear on his screen was upgrading.
Yeah, or loading.
Oh, okay.
In another scene. But he apparently has to do this every time. He has to go between protecting and fighting.
Well, because his sole purpose prior to then had just been to work at the gas station.
Yeah. So, but he goes with Groot, and the Skrulls go with Groot, and they find a cosmic being who has completely worthless powers that we find out later. They go to rescue Rocket, and they all bust in, and they all trip over themselves because they're a worthless team. And they try to fight the woman who had captured Rocket, and the reason she captured Rocket is because she knew it would draw Groot out. She was annoyed it was taking Groot so long, but Rocket pointed out Groot moves at a very slow pace.
And it was cute what that Rocket brought up earlier in the issue was how Groot's such a nice guy. He'll go out of his way, even if it hurts himself, to try to give people a second chance. And it's there that, you know, the focus of this issue had all these wacky characters that were kind of, you know, these goofballs, but Groot had seen the good in them and tried to give him a second chance and help him, try to rescue, Rocket. So.
Right. They put over Groot as a super nice guy is what they were doing. But she kills Groot, explodes him into a million pieces, and then has her guy light them on fire. But his cosmic power friend, who, by the way, one of her abilities was she gave the villain hiccups.
That was cute.
That was the best she could do. But she could use her powers to save a sliver of Groot, which she threw into a part of the ship that was full of water. So Rocket and all those people escape. They think Groot is dead, but we see in the last page, Groot has started to regrow. He is baby Groot.
I like the tease where it was like, baby Groot, enough said.
Yeah, all alone.
By the way, Chikara has a video game coming out.
On cell phones?
On Steam.
Oh.
I will probably play that then. That's fun.
It's have you ever seen the Action Arcade wrestling game?
No.
It was a game that was on Xbox 360. It was actually kind of cool for what it was. But this is that, but more enhanced and better.
I was hoping it was a RPG featuring the Chikara
characters. Oh, cool. I'm looking at it. Let me see if I can play a little bit of the... Well, I don't know if I can play it over the air, but I'm going to look at it.
Well, let's not, because as much as Chikara is like comic...
My favorite part of this book is when Groot's talking to Rocket, and he mentions his little run-in with Silver Surfer. He's like, "You ran with the Silver Surfer? You didn't think to bring him along?"
Well, you know, Silver Surfer isn't a fuck up.
No.
So Groot had to bring the incapable people because he's the nice guy who wants everyone to help out.
All right. House of M number 2, writer Dennis Hopeless, art by Marco Faglia.
Magneto keeps Fing Fang Foom in his office.
Yes.
In chains and plays chess with him.
For reasons unknown.
They never really explain it. And
He's bored and I guess thinks he can do it.
So he keeps a dragon monster.
Marvel, have you seen the have you seen the trailer for this, that fighting game you were talking about, the Chikara one?
No, I have it on here. I haven't seen it.
It looks terrible.
Well, it's a Steam game. They're publishing on the interwebs. It's not going
to
be great.
They would be better off without this. Okay, sorry, I didn't mean to.
Getting back to House of M. The Human Resistance.
I'll stop. There was one instance of a guy picking somebody up and jumping like 20 feet in the air.
Marvel, can you do the recap? I'm not kidding.
Okay, the Red Guard threatens Wanda's twins, who are up to no good, you know, which ends up with painful results for Wolverine. The Human Resistance stages their attack on Magneto's fortress, and their strategic planning leaves a little something to be desired, but they manage to wound Magneto, who they develop something in order to subdue his powers, and it required Hawkeye piercing him with it. So they were able to get him in the shoulder, and they depowered Magneto. He's injured. He can no longer keep Fing Fang Foom at bay because he was one of his prisoners. And he's out to make a mess, and now Namor and Quicksilver enter the picture seeming to take the throne. So problems mounting.
My question is what does this have? What is... Quicksilver have to gain this, and what does Namor have to gain this?
Quicksilver gets to be king.
And what does Namor get out of that?
He gets to kill a bunch of people and go to war. He gets to kill Magneto, who he doesn't like.
Oh, okay. Well, that answers that. Alright, let's move on to our next.
I did like the thing where, the wave attacks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and they're busting in, and Namor just says his little catchphrase.
Imperious Rex!
But he doesn't yell it. He just says it. And Quicksilver's like, see, it's a lot more dramatic and cool that way.
That was cute.
And it was. That was cute. It was because I remarked on that when he did it. It was like dot, 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 Imperius Rex. And I'm like, oh, see, that's so much more threatening. I don't even know what that means. Something King?
Yeah, something King.
Yeah. I've looked it up once.
All right. Next book. Miracle Man by Gaiman and Buckingham. Surprisingly, writer Neil Gaiman, art by Mark Buckingham.
I was concerned about this. I brought this up to both of you guys that because I had never read this. Mm-hmm. And this is very early Neil Gaiman.
So you were worried following Alan Moore that wouldn't be anywhere as good.
Yes. Very early Neil Gaiman, as it turns out, was still a very good writer.
Freaking, the art was really good in this too.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Buckingham's always been great. He's mainly a cover, or he became a cover artist after this. So, but, the important thing to note on this is when they do the new issues, like the brand new issues, he is the artist.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So, and also I was worried about this where in that last Alan Moore issue, we got the issue of Miracle Man is a little fucking creepy. And sort of vaguely evil. That was continued in this.
Yes, very much so.
As the entire issue is about these four people, because four pilgrims can climb the incredibly ridiculously long tower up to Olympus to speak with Miracle Man.
Yes, and basically speak with God and I guess make a prayer and a request.
Yeah.
And along the way, one of them ends up going crazy and dies. When they get to the top, one of the guys, he wants to kill Miracle Man. So he tries to kill him and ends up getting killed.
Yeah, the ricochet from his bullet.
He shoots himself. He shoots Miracle Man knowing he can't kill him and then shoots himself.
Yeah.
There's no explanation for this.
The way it read to me was he tried to shoot Miracle Man in the face, but because he was in such close proximity, the bullet just ricocheted and went in his face.
They showed him pointing the gun at his own head.
Oh, okay. So, I must have missed that.
Yeah, he didn't.
We had a lot of books to read, and I read most of them today, so I read most of these books at breakneck speed. So.
And then the main guy was like, why did he do this when there's only going to be two witnesses? And why did he make this climb just for that?
He knew it wouldn't work, but whatever. And then the girl who gone up with him, she wished to be an artist because she had all these ideas and pictures in her head, but she had no artistic ability. And Miracle Man's like, oh, yeah, we could do that for you. And then the other guy's like, oh, can you bring his daughter back to life? Because she died in the attack.
His daughter was in a coma for 2 years, and they're about to pull the plug.
Yeah.
He just goes, no. And then he leaves. Yeah. Miracle Man's a dick.
Yeah. And when the girl brought up the whole thing, she had all these pictures in her head, and then she wanted to be a painter, I initially thought we were going to get like a monkey palm wish in the sense that all of the ideas that she wanted to paint were going to be turned to paintings, but they were going to be at expense of her head exploding or something.
Well, he's not outright evil, but I mean, this to me indicated he's bought into his own hype.
Uh-huh.
Like he really is positioning himself as a god on Earth, and he's kind of a dick god. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that he forces people to climb these stairs, they gave the indication this takes a really fucking long time. Like, they're having to stop in various areas to sleep.
They're having to
wake up. They eventually get so high that they have to they give them fucking spacesuits because they can't breathe anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's ridiculous that he makes people do this. He should not be making people do this. That's a dick move.
And then they gotta make their way all the way back down.
Yeah. Like, Miracle Man is a dick.
And then he openly refers to himself in several instances of this book of being God.
Yeah. Yeah, he's outright saying he's God. But, I mean, that was his intention. His thinking was, you know, the world is shit. They can't do anything on their own. And they mentioned that again. The world was terrible. It was corrupt and bad, and the people couldn't run it. So they needed a god on Earth. They needed someone to run things, and that was me.
Was it the girl or the father of the little girl who the reason why they went was part of the consequence of young Miracle Man killing everybody?
It was the father. That's how his daughter was in the coma. Okay.
Got it.
She got injured in that, and like that's the thing he really should fix because that's kind of.
His fault, yeah.
His fault, yeah. But he wouldn't do it. He just said no and he left. He wouldn't even talk to him. So, yeah, Miracle Man a dick. That's not how I thought this new series was. Because the name of the run is the Golden Age. It's supposed to be, you know,
it could be
Miracle
ironically.
Man has taken over the world. Well, yeah, it is. It's clear that it's ironic, but it's, you know, he's taken over and the world is a perfect place now. But I imagine these issues, we're going to see that the world is in fact not a perfect place.
Yeah, if anything, he's probably made it worse.
Well, I think he's cured disease and hunger and.
Yeah, but I had the feeling at the same time, what he's done to the earth has kind of, you know, twisted it and. Like, there's a lot of unintended consequences that as a result of him doing all this stuff. And because he sees himself as a god, he's like, you know what? I try to make the world better. All I did was make it worse. And and here's the thing. Because Miracle Man is so high on himself, he's like, you know what? I did everything I could, but these humans are so flawed, I'm not even going to try. And that's why I make this giant ladder.
You kind of know how it's going from the story. Because, I mean, this arc is called the Golden Age, and then we have the Silver Age. Which they didn't finish, and then they're gonna finish, and then the last one is called the Dark Age.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're probably gonna get the fall of Miracle Man through this story.
Kinda hope so at this point.
Yeah, cause he just comes off so, and it's such an effective story because he's so creepy. Mm-hmm. Like he's creepy. Because as it would be if you had, if you present God in a real world context,
mm-hmm.
judging over people, but being a physical being, that is sort of scary.
Yeah, a little bit. And especially when you know it's not someone who actually has all this knowledge. It's just a guy with all this power.
He's smart.
It's only going to magnify his flaws.
But he's also not even a human. He's an alien.
Yeah.
Because the human part of him is dead.
Mm.
Sort of.
I don't know, what do you think as far as following the Moore stuff? Like, this was good, but considering he has such big shoes to fill, I don't know if it's going to be as good as the Moore stuff.
Oh, I think it'll be just as good, because I think, especially when they finish it, Neil Gaiman now is a better writer than Alan Moore was then. And he's going to be writing.
But like you said, this was a lot of the stuff is early Gaiman, so maybe that stuff will suffer.
This was the first issue, and I thought it was really good.
But maybe that stuff won't be later on as good as the Moore stuff.
And he doesn't have wall to walls of text either.
That's one of those things I think they did a lot in the 80s in comic books. I remember when we read Secret Wars and Crisis on Infinite Earths. It felt like the writers didn't know they had an artist. So they would paint this picture that you can clearly see, but they would do it in like a yellow text box.
Alan Moore has always been really wordy.
No, Providence is not that wordy.
No, but traditionally he's been very, like, if you read other stuff he wrote in this era, if you read Swamp Thing, the guy likes his words a lot.
Okay, but maybe it's one of those things that with time he's
go read From Hell, and then a month later when you finally finish reading it, come back and talk to me about how wordy he is.
Okay. All right, let's move on to our next book. Silk number 7, writer Robbie Thompson, art by Tana Ford. Sorry, that name threw me for a loop.
This was a quick issue. It was her last days.
It was a quick book, but unlike the last one, this one was actually somewhat noteworthy.
Yeah, she, Jameson was able to track down her brother, or who was supposedly her brother, and apparently he's in a mental health clinic, and she was trying to make her way there during, you know, the end of the world. And she goes to the place, and it's in fact her brother, and he's mentally ill, and he's got all these newspaper clippings all over his room of Silk. So apparently he knew that Silk was his sister. So they end up hugging, and then the end of the world happens, and that's the end of the issue.
Yeah, it's a good book. I still like that Jameson keeps referring to her as Analog. That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah, this probably should have been Lightning Run, because that's all.
Hey, I asked you guys beforehand, do you want to bump anything up to Lightning Run?
I completely forgot about this book.
All right, I'm not going to.
I didn't read it, so.
Yeah, I'm the guy who's sort of defended Silk. Like, I thought this wasn't going to be the good Spider-Girl book. And, you know, up until the last two issues, it's been a good series, but especially with the last issue and this issue being the last day's book, I don't know. I'll give it maybe one or two more issues before I drop it, but I'm becoming weary
it's
of
gonna
this
get,
book.
It's going to get relaunched anyways. Probably.
As the Spectacular Silk?
Probably, I don't know.
The Who Amazing Silk?
this was the last issue, but I don't know if and when it's going to be relaunched or when it's going to be
I predict this
at.
Series may not be long for this world.
It sells well enough. It sells like in the 40,000 range.
Oh, okay, never mind. I may have been premature then.
Doesn't have to be good to sell, so.
Okay. That's true. Which it has nothing to do with our next book, Silver Surfer number 14, writer Dan Slott, art Michael Allred.
Yeah, Don and Surfer in this issue are rebuilding the universe and Earth. And they are tempted to make things as they see fit, apparently.
Yeah, at first Silver Surfer saw, I'm just going to recreate the universe as it was. The universe needs Galactus because he was a delicate part of the universe. But then he discovers, he's like, you know what? I'm not going to bring back that cancer that was Galactus. He just killed people. And in fact, you know what? Not only am I not going to bring back Galactus, but all the worlds that he devoured, I'm going to bring back.
And also Dawn, looks like she's going to bring back her mom.
Well, yeah, the Dawn parts of this were really cute too, because she's going off separately to recreate the Earth. And, as she's doing, like they were in London, they showed it and she's trying to create it. And then they notice it's flat because she only knew it from postcards she'd seen. So she could not create a full picture of the world. And before they took her away to go make the world, her sister's there, and she's like, how can you trust her to do it? She can't even pick a cereal. Like, you're going to trust her to recreate the world the way it's supposed to. And she was kind of down about that, but had Surfer come out. But the issue is, the Shaper of Worlds is awake, and he's realized that what Silver Surfer is building is wrong.
No bueno.
Yes. Yeah,
it
he
is
was
not
angry.
The way things should be.
Yep, he was angered. And apparently there's two Silver Surfers somehow.
Well, according to the cover of the next issue, but that doesn't mean anything.
Well, no, because if you look at one of the pages, and it's on the same page, they show Dawn on Earth with a Silver Down Silver Surfer at the same time when you see Silver Surfer in space recreating the universe.
Oh, I thought he came back.
I don't know. That was two separate incidences. At least it looked like
I thought it was just he came back because Power Cosmic.
Yeah, when in doubt, Power Cosmic. Sorry.
Even if something's supposed to be a plot point, I just assume it's the Power Cosmic.
It's actually on the last page. They show Dawn with the Silver Surfer with that one guy, and then it's a split panel with Surfer on the other panel in space with the other guy recreating the universe. And then you see in the bottom panel, it's Shaper of Worlds.
Okay.
Maybe he made himself on accident.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too.
Or maybe Don made this version.
Eh.
I'm curious to see where they go with this.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to our next book, Spider Island number 3, writer Christos and Cage, writer Paco Diaz-Lueki.
Now, this is 5 issues, but this felt like the climax.
A little bit too, yeah. Yeah.
Like, okay, some of these books we've read and we said they rushed the ending. This, they sandwiched a lot right smack dab in the middle of the story, which is fine. We haven't got the fight with the Spider Queen yet, but, they got Peter back. A lot of this book was putting over Venom. Cause like even Peter told Venom he should be in charge, not him. Cause you know, I failed and I couldn't kill the spider thing, blah, 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 blah.
And I even like he brings up the analogy. He's like, Flash Thompson again being the star quarterback leading his men to victory.
Yeah. Well, he had to get him over.
Yeah. It was a funny
thing.
And
they also just found out that, you know, Flash Thompson is Venom and Peter Parker is Spider-Man. Which apparently
they had to do at this point in whatever this continuity may be.
Yeah. Spider Queen does not want Peter Parker there, so she tries to draw him out. So what she did was she got all the women's in his life and infected them with spider, which did in fact draw them out. Because they had like a limited amount of like the lizard serum. They were trying to get Stegron to make more stuff for them, because as we established, only by rewriting genetic code can you break the Spider Queen's hold. and they were saying, like, you know, we shouldn't be using this on them. We should be using it on superpowered people. She wants us to use it up, and she's trying to draw us out. That's why he infected all of them. But they decide, you know what? We're heroes, and heroes don't just do things to win. They do things because they're right. So they go, and they inject the women, and they save them, and they bring them back, but then find out they've all been implanted with tracking things. Well, they said they were bombs, but they were also tracking devices.
Yeah, Vision was able to reach it within them and take them out. He stopped them from being bombs, but the fact of the matter is the tracking devices were already activated, and from there we saw a spider, giant Ant-Man, rip the roof off their compound and attempt to kill the heroes.
Right. So they all gather up, like they're trying to fight, but they, you know, all of Manhattan except the people who live in this area are spider people controlled by the Queen. So they have to escape. Tony realizes that the Goblin formula is in fact driving him batshit insane. So he decides, I'm be a hero. I'm going to hold him back. You guys leave. Cause he feels himself slipping. He knows he thought he was going to be able to control it, but he can't.
Yeah. It's Tony, even to where, you know, he's not even using his jet boots anymore. He's using the glider.
He's riding the glider.
He's completely changed the color of his armor to the purple and green of the Green Goblin costume. So he realized his mind's slipping, and instead he takes the Black Knight sword, and he realized that the only way he's going to get over this is from dying. And if he has to die, he might as well use the Black Knight sword.
Because the Black Knight sword, the curse is lifted if the person using it dies.
Correct.
So presumably someone else can pick up the Ebony Blade after that and be all right. I don't know why the Ebony Blade is that important. It's magic. Maybe that'll be a resolution. No, it really is. Like, maybe that'll be a resolution.
No, I realize that, yeah.
They do something with the magic blade. Because they brought up that blade, and it hadn't been a plot point before this. Like, Venom was just carrying it around, but he wouldn't use it because, you know, cursed.
Yes.
So maybe now that it's uncursed, Venom will go back and grab it, and somehow they'll be able to use it to solve all these problems. Even though they've repeatedly stated you can't just cure the spider disease. Like, if there's spiders, they're either spiders forever, or you turn them into a lizard monster.
Or, you know, I think, who else had transformed?
Morbius.
Yeah, the vampire.
Captain Marvel is Morbius, and Captain America is a werewolf.
Yeah.
But I mean, you've only got so much of that shit you can do.
Yeah. So I'm curious to see how they're gonna wrap things up. Well, we might get a bummer ending, and it just as well. It's a Battle World book, so it doesn't really necessarily need to have that.
With Spider-Man. We're gonna have a Spider-Man book have a sad ending.
You never know though. All right, let's talk Squadron Sinister number 3, writer Mark Gunningham, art Carlos Pacheco.
Batman is a genius.
Yes, he fact is.
Pretty good. There's one more issue left after this. Nighthawk reveals to Wizard who his inside man on the Frightful Four is, and it's a Sandman who stole the Argonite weapon for him, and he returns it to Nighthawk as part of his plan. So then Nighthawk had been interrogating and torturing Pastepot Pete to give Hyperion the impression he was a culprit. And he's brought before Hyperion, and then he accuses Wizard of being the one who stole it.
He's so such a dick.
Yes, he set him up. So before he can escape, Hyperion just vaporizes him to ashes. And then Nighthawk snaps Pastepot Pete's neck, saying he's done with him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's there we see... I want to call them by their proper names, but I'm just gonna call them Batman. We show Batman talking to Ring Lantern. Yes, he's like, you have the power of a god in your hand, and you choose to just be a normal dude.
Well, because Dr. Spectrum he's not the smartest guy on earth, and you know
why is he a doctor then?
Well, that could mean he's good at medicine, but he's not necessarily, you know, good at politics.
He's not practical, or he's not street smart.
Yeah, or maybe he's not a real doctor.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the first time
it's just a superhero name or super villain name.
He's basically telling you, he's like, oh, you're being set up to be the one who killed Thor and Iron Thor, so they're
and he was being set up.
Yeah. So then
by Nighthawk.
Yeah, so he said, oh, you better just abandon your identity and your superhero thing and just go into hiding.
Yeah, he tells him he has to give him the gem that gives him his powers because he can track you that way, which is apparently complete bullshit. But his thing was, you know, he's like, you can get away from Hyperion, but they think you killed Thor. And Doom will be able to find you anywhere. But the only way he can track you is through the gem, so you gotta get rid of it. So he presumably gave Nighthawk the gem. Nighthawk is working with Zarda. He hasn't completely sold her out yet, under the thinking that she's sleeping with Hyperion, and therefore he is more likely to trust her.
Mm-hmm.
There was a battle between Newtopia, which confirmed is the new universe, Earth. And they jobbed out a bunch of Star Brands.
Yes.
Just completely jobbed them out. All they could do is fly and punch.
Not giant news, and there's a reason why we didn't do it in the news segment, but apparently there's a new book from Marvel they're going to do post-Secret Wars.
Star Brand and Night Mask, and they look like little kids.
Let's see. You guys can continue your review. I forgot to pitch this news story to you, but I remember there was a big deal for the writer.
Marvel had pretty much done it all.
The issue ends with Zarda asking Nighthawk what he did with Spectrum. He says he disappeared, so he also tells her to leave and never return since he's done with her also. So she then inquires what's left now that it's just, you know, Nighthawk and Hyperion. And apparently he has plans involving the use of a Spectrum gem. And so I'm guessing Nighthawk is going to kill Hyperion and then go after Doom like everyone else.
Probably, yeah.
Fitting.
Well, he definitely, he cleared the table. He got rid of all the other squadron members.
Yes.
So that he could more effectively kill Hyperion with no trouble, and then he would be in charge.
Yes.
But he's never said he wants to kill Doom, but you are right, we will get that reveal because he is a villain, and all the villains in Battle World want to kill Doom.
Oh, now I remember the big takeaway of that new series. It's because the co-creator of Gargoyles is on tap for that.
I liked Gargoyles when I was a kid.
As did I. And I'm sure if you watch that back now as an adult, it probably holds up.
No idea. Maybe.
Yeah, so he's attached to that project. So even though it's two characters I could care less about, it's got maybe a person writing it that I might care about.
First issue, I'll read it.
Yeah, as will I.
Like, next.
All right. Our last and final book, Thor's number 3, writer Jason Aaron, art by Chris Brouse.
We saved this for last?
It just alphabetically, like the way I had things planned out. For some reason why I decided to put all the publishers that weren't Marvel first, and because I'm doing things alphabetically after Marvel, while doing all the Marvel books, Thor's is last.
Thor's number 3. Loki sat in a room and a bunch of Thors walked in to talk to him because they thought he was killing Thors and Jane Fosters. Or Donald Blakes and Jane Fosters.
Well, he did confess to killing the Donald Blakes and the Jane Fosters, but he did not confess to killing the Thors.
That was the entire issue. Until the end, when a Thor went to the Deadlands, where apparently they dumped the bodies, found a bunch of bodies, and then another Thor was there, and they indicated he may have been the one who did it, but they never said that, and he probably didn't.
So
he did say he killed it. He's like, oh, just like your... Or like he more or less said he did it.
He said he did it, but this isn't the last issue. I feel a swerve.
Yeah,
here's
why I think it's going to happen.
Okay, it's
definitely
a swerve.
Because this is a cop story, we're going to wind up getting the big reveal is it's going to be a dirty cop, and it's going to be one of the Thors.
Well, if
presumably
this is a cop story.
He left him for dead, though. He was about to die by the zombies, and it was Odinson that saved him. I'm pretty sure they made it clear that Rune Thor was the one.
If this was a cop story, then why wasn't there like a Black Thor who said he was too old for this shit? Or that he had 3 days till retirement and then they killed him?
I thought the Beta Ray Bill was a couple of days from retirement.
Was he?
I believe so.
I'm sorry.
And we had a Black Storm, but
Thor told him, here's hoping you put up more of a fight than your partner did. And then he's like, what?
Swerve.
Well, but he did beat him within an inch of his life. He was about to die and beaten by zombies, and he got saved. So why did he do that?
I don't know. I don't like this.
For lulz?
This comic.
Are you let down by Jason Aaron?
A little bit. I just don't care. I don't want a book with this many Thors. I want a book with one Thor. And they were doing a really good story in Thor, well, and it never finished.
But even then, in that book, that has two Thors.
Yeah, but that book's good. Yeah, like, well, I want to get back to the story of the crazy rock song guy who wants to pollute other worlds. And
looting and polluting is not the way.
The war. Like, that's what I want, and this isn't it. And I think I got attitude towards it because of that.
Well, give it 3 months, and we're going to get a renumbering.
Okay.
And a continuation of that storyline.
Okay. What's our next segment? Baby?
I mean, our next segment is, in fact, Book of the Week. It wouldn't be Book of the Week if, for whatever reason, the song takes forever to play. Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of a team.
Everything is awesome when we live in our dream. The great feeling all time I had all my life.
I don't know why it's that file that always takes forever to play. Like, everything else goes off without a hitch, but almost it seems like every week it's that song that takes forever to play.
You gotta figure it out, brother.
I know. Maybe my computer doesn't much care for a Lego movie. Which, by the way,
what was your book of the week?
Speaking of Legos, I watched that DC Legion of Doom movie today.
We don't care about that.
Hey, what was your book of the week? I'm gonna go with Dying in the Dead.
John Flood.
Yeah, before I read Dying in the Dead, that was going to be my book of the week. Laurel? Just flip a coin.
I don't remember what we read. Kind of tired. John Flood is really good. I'll correct myself next week.
Okay. Awesome. All right, let's go into our final segment, next week's books. Okay, since I already ruined it for Allura on Facebook, Star comes out next week! Hooray!
Okay, but I'm going to start up at the top like we usually do.
Okay, sorry.
You and me have All-Star Section 8, number 4.
Ooh, I forgot that.
Mr. Bueno Excelente's wedding day to the disgusting monster and co-starring Wonder Woman. That's a winner. Suiciders, number 6.
Ooh,
I recall, I did not like the last issue of that, so I'll see if
I made my little mock list and
this is a new arc apparently.
Okay, they haven't really finished the last arc, but that's all right.
Yeah, they did more or less.
The story's still going. Whatever it is,
and since we're talking DC, I will in fact be lightning rounding Batman as well.
Okay. I am looking through. Stuff. I think I'm lightning round, although you might read with me. Bloodstrike number 2.
I saw that on there and I'm not reading that again.
With two different covers, both of them are by Rob Liefeld.
What's it called? Bloodstrikers?
No, Bloodstrike.
Oh, okay.
Sir. His name is Bloodstrike. How could you get that wrong?
After that first issue and considering how many books I got, no, I'm not making time for the PP in the jar.
As you said, Starve, number 4.
Oh, you skipped over, there's a, Star Trek, Green Lantern in Star Trek.
Oh shit, I forgot about that. Okay, Star Trek, Green Lantern.
That's pretty good. Shame on you.
I'm sorry. Injection number 5.
Shame!
Walking Dead 146.
Mm-hmm.
1602 Witch Hunter Angela number 3.
Did you name off Deadly Class?
Yeah, I have that. Deadly Class. I got it on my list, though.
Sorry.
Worry not, Marvel.
1602 Witch Hunter Angela number 3.
Gotta hate that
book. A-Force number 4. Amazing Spider-Man, Renew Your Vows, number 5. That's the end of that.
The thrilling conclusion.
Yes.
Civil War, number 4.
You sound so bored.
I'm tired.
You want me and Laura to finish this up so you can go to bed?
No,
yeah,
I am Laura.
Yeah, he is Laura.
Don't passively, don't take this out on the listener.
Darth Vader number 9.
Okay.
Giant size Marvel Avengers vs. X-Men number 4. We don't have to read that if you don't want to.
What the hell's giant size Marvel Avengers vs. X-Men?
Little Marvel.
Oh, okay, okay. No, I'll read that.
We don't have, okay. And the most exciting comic, Journey to Star Wars, The Force Awakens, yeah. Shattered Empire number 1. The one I've been waiting for. So hyped. And yes, that is the entire title. Let me say that again. Journey to Star Wars, The Force Awakens, Shattered Empire number 1.
You're going to have to settle for
the longest title ever.
You're going to have to settle for Force Awakens on the
why not Journey to Star Wars? Because that's the first
one. Oh, Shattered Empire. Never mind.
It's got 3 titles. That's okay. Korvac Saga number 4.
Okay.
Miss Marvel number 18.
Awesome.
Planet Hulk number 5.
The Red Skull conclusion.
I'm not reading Red Skull.
Yeah, it's the last issue.
It's the last issue.
We have a lot of books. I'm just saying.
Okay, no, read it. It's fine. Okay. Me and Marvel will read it. It's fine.
Secret Wars 2099, 5 of 5.
Last issue, yes.
Siege number 3.
And last, but certainly not least.
Ninjak number 7.
Yes.
I count 800 comics.
I count 21, which is actually less than what we did this week.
I didn't even add anything.
No? 21 books, excluding your lightning round review of Bloodstrike and excluding my Batman.
That should be the feature review. The only thing I really want to read is Star Wars.
I want to read Star.
As do I. That's an amazing book, and if you haven't already, read that.
I am getting the canon sequel to Return of the Jedi next week.
Meh.
Are you actually going to read a comic book on Wednesday now?
Yes.
I'm shocked.
You're not going to save it for last?
Dude, once we get done with the show, I'm going to go to Walmart and try to buy a toy from Star Wars, for God's sake.
Nerd.
Read the comic.
This is coming from a guy named Fett Man who allegedly goes to PWG shows in Boba Fett helmets.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
You don't go to PWG shows anymore. You can't get a ticket.
No, I can't get in
because Dave Meltzer stole your tickets.
I'm gonna pull a heel turn and do what I've been threatening to do this whole time. Call the whole fire department.
Well, that's not gonna get you a ticket though.
No, it's probably not gonna get us more fans of the show if I do that.
No.
So I may not do that.
Yeah, it's bad news.
Because I've been threatening so many times on the board, folks are gonna know it's me.
All right, let's wrap it up.
Okay. So from all of us at halfguard.com, thanks for checking out the show. And as always, see you guys next week. Adios.